If you're dashing around right now trying to knock items off of your holiday to-do list, it might be time to take a moment and think back to a time when a bowl of oyster stew was your Christmas dinner and a $1.75 pair of gloves took care of your gift giving. Michigan historians Priscilla and Larry B. Massey of Allegan are here now. Among their books, Walnut Pickles and Watermelon Cake, A Century of Michigan Cooking, written together. And Larry is the author of 21 books. His latest is Blue Water, Red Metal, and Green Gold, The Color of Michigan's Past. Priscilla and Larry, it's very good to have you with us today.
Very happy to be here, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Larry, your book, Pioneer Diaries, has a whimsical chapter about Christmas titled 19th Century Michigan Christmas, Bah Humbug. Why were early Michiganders so bah humbug about Christmas?
Well, you know, I looked at these diaries. They got a collection of them at the Western Michigan University Archives, hundreds of diaries kept by just ordinary people. And I looked at what was happening on Christmas Eve and Christmas through the years, starting in the 1830s up to the 1880s. And what I found before the Civil War was that Christmas was not being celebrated. It was just another day. People went down to the store and did shopping. They went and paid their taxes. They went to the post office and mailed letters. The post office was open. Just hardly any mention at all of Christmas. And what I think the reason for that was, Michigan was settled by New Englanders, or those, the sons and daughters of New Englanders who had moved to Western New York in the 1820s, then came on into Michigan, and they brought with them traditions that were common in New England, which was, you know, it was not a good thing to celebrate Christmas, the Puritan tradition. It was even against the law in Massachusetts until 1856 to celebrate Christmas. So they brought this tradition with them and kept it up.
Did you notice in these diaries at all, Larry, did anybody, you know, throw a gift somebody's way?
Well, what happens is around the Civil War time, you start to see Christmas creep into the diaries in a very austere way. One man itemized what he had spent for Christmas in the 1860s, and the total was $1.70, and the 70 cents included a gallon of oysters. But he bought one present. He bought a thimble for his wife for 50 cents. And so, you know, in other words, here's a thimble, honey. Keep sewing. Merry Christmas.
But why did things begin to take a turn to the more festive as we went through and past the Civil War?
Well, we start to get different ethnic people coming into Michigan, the Dutch and the Germans and people like that, the Danish. And they brought with them their own traditions of celebrating Christmas. And then during the Civil War, a lot of the troops came back from the South. Down South, they celebrated Christmas in a festive way. And they came back with these ideas of, hey, this is not so bad. This is fun. And so you see it creeping in, although you don't find people putting up Christmas trees in their own homes. They might have a communal Christmas tree down at the church. And everybody would go down on Christmas Eve and get a present from the church. Of course, back then there was no electricity, so whatever illumination was candles. And they put little candles, a little bit bigger than a birthday candle, on the tree. And so the whole ceremony would take 15, 20 minutes, and then the candles would burn out.
And you'd have to go home.
Right. Yeah.
Priscilla, did that mean that Christmas dinner actually began to be a thing, as Larry described, as things got more festive after the Civil War? Did dinners reflect that?
Absolutely, absolutely, and these, the dinners started out being a lot of people wrote about having oysters for Christmas dinner, which really surprised me, and because you don't really see it around now. It didn't go through all the generations, but I think because of the pioneers that came from out east, they had the oysters. But the people would really show off their baking. The women would, you know, they'd already have things. They'd have things in their pantry, and they'd have things in their root cellar. But that was the time to show off their baking. And the Swedes would make their braided Irish breads, or, you know, the rye breads. And the Irish had their soda breads with the cross on it, of course. And the French would be making their chocolate custards or cream puffs. So those would come out that day, and all the families would get together.
What might surprise or perhaps even appall us today that might have been on the table for, let's say, a Michigan Christmas dinner in the 1870s?
Well, there definitely would have been the fresh oysters. Yeah. The oysters would have been used in many different ways, and they you know, sometimes they cooked them, but most of the time they liked them just on ice. But they might have them oyster fritters or something like that on that day. They would have had passenger pigeon was still, there was any kind of wild game they would have had if that was available. And, of course, their pigs and their chickens. But, you know, they were basic eaters, what was around. What is fresh and what is popular now is what was going on back then. So if they had dried apples, they were making stuffing maybe with dried apples. Or the English would have their beef and Yorkshire pudding. But they'd also have their pickled things, like in their pantries.
Yes.
And they pickled everything, Cynthia. Everything from pumpkins to peaches to fish. You know, maybe they went and they had a smelt run, and they would can that up, the smelt, and they could open that up later on.
Well, they had to. They didn't have a freezer to throw it in, did they?
That's right. They had nothing. So, and it was one of those where they got up at 4 in the morning or 5 in the morning, and one of the sons, if they were lucky, would go out and chop the wood and help mom get the wood stove going, and because there weren't electric stoves. And the whole thing would be getting that oven hot, getting it even, because you have to have it a couple hours going before you can do your baking.
As far as gifts, it's interesting. You know, you talk about, here, honey, here's a thimble.
Yeah.
My mother grew up on a farm in Guelph, Ontario, so not especially far from here, maybe 4 hours drive from the southeast Michigan area.
Uh-huh.
And I know she talked about how happy they were to get an orange on Christmas morning,
yeah.
Maybe a little doll, very much like the kind of things you'd read about in the Laura Ingalls Wilder Little House book. So, was that pretty typical for especially these farm families in the late 19th
yeah.
and early 20th century?
If they do mention gifts, it's very utilitarian. A boy might get a jackknife or a pair of gloves or something like that. Although I did find one mention in the 1880s of a woman that found a silk dress in her stocking, which would be kind of difficult to cram in, but she was excited about it.
What do you think, Larry, do you think those early Michiganders would think and say if they could see what we do for Christmas in 2014.
They wouldn't be able to believe it, I don't think, because it's so festive and everybody's out shopping, and starting with Thanksgiving, everybody's out shopping and spending a lot of money. And they didn't have a lot of money to spend, for one thing. Somebody might go out and work a full 12 hours and make 75 cents back then.
It was a lot of homemade.
There was a lot of homemade things. They would frame mottos, for example, and give them to their children, religious-type mottos.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they'd recognize Christmas at all.
Larry B. Massey and Priscilla Massey, Michigan historians and authors. Larry's latest book is Blue Water, Red Metal, and Green Gold, The Color of Michigan's Past. Thank you both for getting us in the holiday mood.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you.